Hey, I'm Tom Power. I'm the host of the podcast Q with Tom Power, where we talk to all kinds of artists, actors, writers, musicians, painters. We had Green Day on the other day talking about their huge album, American Idiot. Nicole Byer came on to talk about ADHD and comedy. And then there's Dan Levy. While we were talking about filmmaking, we talked about his insecurities.
I sometimes feel like I have this desire to, like, perform, to be a version of myself that people might like.
Listen to Q with Tom Power to hear your favorite artists as they truly are, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast.
So this is a final warning.
Serve!
Unless you immediately comply with the instructions we gave you earlier, we will now consider other options to ensure that our instructions are followed, including seeking assistance from the police.
That was the scene yesterday at a pro-Palestinian protest at McGill University in Montreal. More than 60 tents now occupy a section of the campus at that university. And despite that warning from a university security guard, the encampment remains, for now. Later today, a lawyer in Montreal will be filing an injunction against the encampment on behalf of two McGill students. It's not just at McGill. Across Canada and the United States, there are protest encampments. Some have been in place for weeks. Others are just being set up.
Right now we are at UBC at an encampment that is being held at McCansfield. There is a food stand set up with lots of fruits, veggies, homemade goods that have been brought by various different people. There's an intake tent. There are tents all around us. There's music playing in the background, and I see a lot of hope as well.
That's a bit of the scene yesterday at the University of British Columbia, where students have started an encampment. Ben Jameson is a producer here at The Current, and he is in Vancouver. Ben, hello.
Hi, Matt.
What was happening yesterday at UBC?
Well, you heard a little bit of it there. So it's starting around 5 a.m. Monday morning. Students started setting up tents on a soccer field kind of nestled within the heart of UBC campus. And we just heard from Naisha Khan, and she's one of the young people helping organize this. And here's what she had to say about why students are there.
We really want to center, first and foremost, that this is in solidarity with Palestine amidst an ongoing genocide. We also are here to call on the university to divest from companies complicit in the genocide. Currently, UBC invests through their endowment fund over $66 million through companies like Lockheed Martin. So these companies are actively contributing to the genocide. We also are calling on the university to condemn Israel and to support Palestinian right to resistance and right to return. And there also is an academic scholasticide occurring in Gaza, with universities being bombed and completely destroyed. And so we're calling for the active condemnation of that as well, and for the condemnation of the Israeli universities that are also complicit in this genocide.
So we've been hearing for a few weeks now about these sit-ins on campuses in the United States. And as I mentioned, now they're here in Canada as well. What did this one look like when you were there?
Well, when I got there, and keep in mind, like, it started around 5 a.m. So I got there around 11, and there was about 20 tents that had been set up already, maybe 70 people kind of milling about. The area is fenced in, like we've seen in other places as well, but draped on all of this metal fencing are these painted bed sheets or giant printed out signs. And they'll say things like calls for a ceasefire or ending the genocide. And of course, calls for UBC to divest, as we just heard there. And one sign just said, UBC sucks.
We heard one of the organizers. Who else is there?
Well, it's primarily students and faculty from what I could tell, and mostly from UBC. But there are some from other schools as well in the area. Simon Fraser University, there was someone that spoke. There's also people coming kind of from the wider community, some local First Nations, as well as other Palestinian groups, and just regular people. Like, you saw families with like a wagon load of kids kind of wandering across the field.
And what are people doing when they get there?
Well, there were people setting up their tents, and then there's people reading and eating, napping, playing music. There was even a few dogs running around. But by 1 p.m., there was probably about 100 people, and then the speeches began.
We are here for Gaza. We are here because every university in Gaza has been destroyed, and our own university is complicit.
So the encampment was set up yesterday morning, as you said. What are they hearing from the university?
So in the UBC case, like, we're a couple hours into this by the time I was there. And there was a few police cruisers kind of on the outskirts of the field. But other than that, nothing seemed to be stopping students from entering the field and setting up tents. Here's Naisha Khan again.
We are not really open for negotiation. We are firm in our demands, and the university has failed to respond to any forms of demands by any other groups, and we'll be here until our demands are met.
What is the university saying about the protest?
So UBC sent CBC a statement about the encampment, which in part reads, UBC values freedom of expression and respects peaceful protests. We understand that some in our community want to protest the violence and war they see unfolding. UBC will be monitoring and assessing the situation on the Vancouver campus. We will also liaise with the RCMP on this matter. We also remind everyone that hate and intolerance have no place at UBC. The university must be a place of reasoned debate where conflicting views can peacefully coexist.
That statement mentions hate and intolerance. There have been concerns about cases of anti-Semitism at these protests, both in the United States and here in Canada. What did people say about that at UBC?
Well, everyone I spoke with said that there's zero tolerance at the UBC encampment for this. Here's Nisha again.
We do not have any form of anti-Semitism. We do not accept it in any way. There are community guidelines. They're like listed over there. And everyone who agrees to be part of this encampment has to commit to those rules. Otherwise, they will not be welcome.
And Matt, on top of this, many of the speakers at the UBC rally were Jewish, including Professor Jordy Rosenberg. Here's what he had to say.
I want to say personally, I've not experienced any anti-Semitism ever in any Palestine organizing space in the U.S., not in Canada, and also not in the West Bank, and not in East Jerusalem. Never, not once.
We also called and emailed a number of Jewish student groups on the UBC campus to get a sense of how students in their organizations are feeling about the protests on campus. Now, no one got back to us from the Jewish Students Association, the Jewish Law Students Association, the Chabad House. Mind you, it is Passover, and I was able to speak with the rabbi at that center, but he said he was not doing media interviews during Passover.
So in the United States, we have seen counter-protests as well. Is anything like that happening at UBC?
Well, not when I was there, but later in the evening after I'd left, a group of counter-protesters did arrive, but I haven't heard of any major clashes.
As I mentioned, it's not just at UBC that in this country the encampments are popping up. We also spoke with people at the protests in McGill yesterday in Montreal.
Yes, students from Montreal's other big three universities were also at the McGill encampments. We spoke with Sasha Robson. She's a McGill student and a member of Independent Jewish Voices, which is a national grassroots Jewish organization.
I've seen no evidence of anti-Semitism since being here. Independent Jewish Voices has been a central part of planning throughout this encampment. And I think that's really important to highlight because McGill has repeatedly mischaracterized pro-Palestinian student activism on this campus. Like, we had a Seder here last night. It's Passover, and we had a lot of Jewish community members from all over Montreal here. It was a really beautiful event, and it's really disappointing to not see McGill highlighting something like that when they just are always ready to accuse anti-Semitism. McGill is treating us as a monolith, and it's really important to respect that we all have different opinions, and while many Jewish students do support what the State of Israel is doing, a lot of our members don't and find it disgusting to see our name used to defend such acts.
The encampment at McGill began on the weekend. What are officials at the university saying now?
Well, they sent us a statement via email Monday afternoon, and it says in part, the situation escalated Sunday afternoon with the arrival of external protesters and a significant increase in the number of tents on campus. In the late afternoon, early evening, the McGill students indicated through their lawyers their refusal to engage in discussion and that they intended to remain on campus indefinitely. After those discussions failed, we saw evidence of appalling anti-Semitic rhetoric and behaviors from some of the encampment. We cannot and will not tolerate this. As a result, we have moved on to next steps governed by our operating procedures on demonstrations, protests, and occupations, which include efforts to de-escalate before moving to steps to involve police assistance.
That statement, again, mentions alleged incidents of anti-Semitism. What impact is that having?
Like at UBC, CBC reached out to Jewish student groups yesterday, including Hillel McGill, Chabad McGill, and Startup Nation Concordia, and we didn't hear back.
There are some Canadian politicians who are weighing in, though, on what's happening, in particular at McGill, right?
Yes. Anthony Housefather, who is the Liberal MP for the Montreal riding of Mount Royal, he's also a McGill grad and a prominent voice in Montreal's Jewish community. He says some Jewish students at McGill have told him that they don't feel safe on campus right now.
There are exams today and tomorrow, and I've heard over the course of the weekend from literally hundreds of Jewish students and their parents and grandparents that are afraid of what's happening on campus. And it's a terrible message to send to the Jewish community in Montreal that has been in Montreal for over 250 years. In the end result, though, peaceful demonstration is one thing. I am perfectly prepared to have peaceful demonstrations, but having people set up camp on the McGill campus is a violation of McGill's code of conduct. It shouldn't have been permitted in the first place. And I call on McGill to work with everyone involved to make sure that it's dismantled.
So these protests are just really unfolding now here in Canada. But in the United States, I mean, they're in their third week at Columbia University. What are we hearing from that campus?
Yeah, so that university in New York was the first campus to see these types of encampments. And Shai Weinstein is a 27-year-old Canadian-Israeli from Toronto who actually went down to see these protests.
I decided to come here for myself and just to observe and, you know, try and have discussions with individuals who are here, you know, see what different beliefs people have. My mom's side is all from Israel. April 27th, 2023, I went on a vacation to Israel to visit and be with my grandparents, and I just decided to stay in Nova. Supernova was my first music festival ever. It was a nightmare. It was horrible, you know. We drove over corpses as we were fleeing away. You know, to them it's justified, it's okay. I deserved it. It's really heartbreaking to see the amount of people who either support what Hamas did to me and my friends on that day or outright deny it. And I've seen a lot of it. I do believe most of it is very well-intentioned, but a lot of people don't understand what's happening.
So he went to see the encampment at Columbia University in New York. Tell us about some of the people who were there at that protest and what the mix of people there was.
Like at UBC, at McGill, you know, it's different groups, but it's also people like Dalia Derazim, who's a student at Columbia and a member of the encampment.
So my family is from Tulkerem, which just had one of the deadliest days in its history in the last week. I understand the necessity of me being here and being able to be a voice that they don't have. I think there's not a single Palestinian who has not been impacted. And the massacres just keep getting worse. The death tolls continue to rise. So I think that's what should be centered right now, not the safety of college students at Columbia University.
So that's in the United States. Just before I let you go, Ben, based on the people that you spoke with, how long are they planning on staying on campus at UBC?
Indefinitely, until their demands are heard by both the university and the wider community. I mean, they are focused on a ceasefire and they're focused on UBC divestment.
Ben, thank you very much for this.
Thanks, Matt.
Ben Jamieson is a producer here on The Current. An update on this story. McGill University's president said this morning that the university did request police assistance late yesterday.
Hi, I'm Paul Havershood, host of The Cost of Living. It's a show about money and how it shapes our lives. In big ways, like why inflation could get worse if we all make more money.
Here's the hard truth in all of this. Workers are going to have to eat that real wage loss.
And small ways, like what's the fastest way to order fast food?
That first Big Mac that comes out of the kitchen is going to the drive-thru.
Check out The Cost of Living. We're on CBC Listen or wherever you get podcasts.
Alan Blinder has been writing about the campus unrest across the United States. He's a national correspondent for The New York Times. He covers education. He is in Atlanta, Georgia. Alan, hello to you.
Good morning, Matt.
What's the state of protests across these campuses in the United States this week? How widespread are they?
Well, they've escalated. They've spiraled. There are more of them. I mean, yesterday here in Georgia, we saw one pop up at the University of Georgia for a few hours before there were arrests. They are growing in number. But the real news in the United States today is that the Columbia protests significantly escalated overnight when a group of demonstrators essentially seized Hamilton Hall. And Columbia's response so far has been to shut the campus down, basically. They have now barred anyone who is not an essential employee or a student living in one of seven residence halls from the campus. So that started around early Wednesday or early Tuesday morning. So now we're waiting to see what the university's response will be over the course of the day.
Yesterday, the university gave protesters a deadline of, 2 p.m.?
2
leave,
p.m.
Yeah, to leave the encampment. And so this escalation comes in the wake of that deadline.
It is. I mean, Columbia's offer yesterday to students was essentially, if you leave the encampment by 2 p.m., you will not be disciplined for certain elements of the encampment. Some students obviously defied that offer from the university, and now this occupation began, you know, sort of overnight in the United States. And the question is, will Colombia escalated its response. It was only on Friday that Colombia said that, you know, they had called in the New York Police Department before. It had inflamed tensions, and they feared calling the police in again would do the same. So now the question is whether from Friday to Tuesday, Colombia's leadership is going to have a shift in approach.
You've been writing about the different approaches from different universities to these encampments. Walk us through that just briefly. I mean, how haven't university officials across the country been dealing with the protests?
I mean, you have a whole menu of options for administrators in some schools. You've seen them essentially say, the encampments can stay. We're not going to bother them. We're not going to touch them. You've seen some administrators say you can have an encampment with limitations. And you've had some, like here in Atlanta, where Emory University moved quite swiftly against an encampment last week. It went up somewhere, you know, 7:45, 8 a.m. And by lunchtime, it was gone. So you've got a suite of options, and it really depends a lot on if a university is public or private. It depends on the local political attitudes surrounding protest. But you've got university administrators really working from a wide range of options, none of which really have seemed to work in terms of truly ending the demonstration. I mean, Texas tried last week to really end an encampment, and we saw another attempted encampment yesterday.
What is the balance, do you think, that, and again, this is something that you've been writing about, that university officials are trying to strike in responding to these protests?
Well, this goes back to that whole public versus private university notion here, because you've got public universities in particular, our First Amendment, a free speech element, but that, you know, is not as enshrined in law on private campuses, but it's a fundamental concept of academia, free speech, free debate, academic freedom. So you've got university presidents and chancellors trying to say, you know, we want to foster this kind of debate and dialogue that's central to the university experience. And you've also got, say, Jewish students saying, we don't want an environment where we are intimidated, where we are harassed. So you've got essentially this balance, and then you add in the mix of just, do these encampments disrupt the learning environment, so to speak? Do they, you know, cause undue strain on the university and its core mission? And that's not been an easy test, an easy balancing act for administrators to figure out.
I mean, there's also questions as to who is involved in these protests, whether the protests are student-led or whether they are being led or steered or infiltrated, perhaps is the wrong word, but whether outside involvement is shaping what we're seeing on the campuses.
I mean, look, we've seen at some of these demonstrations, there have been people who are not connected to the university in question. There have been people who have been unconnected and arrested in those protests. So I don't think there's any question at all that there are some people who are not, you know, students, faculty members, employees who are involved in these protests. I think at the majority of these schools, you've probably got a majority of protesters who are, in fact, tied to the schools. But figuring out that exact breakdown has been a challenge for everybody.
Do you see, people have said that there are echoes of 1968 in this, where we saw anti-Vietnam protests across campuses in the United States. And people have said in many ways, the scale of these protests are echoes of what we saw then. And there was a political element as well, because that was an election year. Do you see that parallel?
You know, I think that it remains to be seen exactly how long these protests will last, what kind of ferocious police response we will see at scale. The 68 protest obviously provoked pretty significant police responses on some campuses. We'll see if universities end up ramping this up even more. We'll see if the protests last. I mean, look, for students in the United States, the academic year is generally coming to a close. Summer semesters are looming, so are summer internships, going home and vacations and everything else. So one of the big questions in the United States right now is what happens to these protests after final exams, after graduation?
What happens to commencement ceremonies
exactly.
as well?
Exactly. I mean, you had the University of Southern California already cancel its main commencement exercise. Columbia, the calendar is looking straight at May 15th, which is when their commencement is scheduled for. So you've got, you know, look, back in the fall when there were protests on campuses in the U.S., you had a lot of administrators just kind of praying for winter break to arrive. I think you're in the same spot now, where you've got a fair number of administrators really just watching the clock and hoping that the end of the semester will bring an end to this.
Although what we saw, as you said, where you started last night at Columbia University with an escalation suggests that those protesters aren't going anywhere anytime soon.
But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we're still trying to understand exactly what subset of protesters are occupying Hamilton Hall at Columbia. You know, the question, there's always a matter of whether taking a more extreme stance, if you will, could unnerve other demonstrators who say that's a bridge too far for me. But it remains to be seen. I mean, the occupation at this point is, you know, less than 8 hours old.
Alan, thank you very much for this.
My pleasure.
Alan Blinder is a national correspondent for the New York Times. He writes about education in the United States. He was in Atlanta, Georgia.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.